We are on the fly, and we are at Vintage today. It's Monday, so of course we're at Vintage because we're always at Vintage on Mondays at Air Venture. And what a beautiful day. Ray, I don't know who you know and what strings you pulled to make this happen, but oh my gosh, look at this.
Well, I agree with that. And what a guest we have with us today. We have Adrian Eichhorn. This gentleman, there's interesting pilots, but this guy is at the top of the list.
Okay.
He really is.
Well, you say that about everybody, Ray, but okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah. He's pretty good, isn't he?
Adrian, you are at the top of the list today.
Well, thank you very much.
Right behind us, we have a 1962 Beach Bonanza, and it's restored, and it's restored very well. But this gentleman flew this airplane around the world, and then later he decided to fly it to the North Pole. Now, that's something.
It is something. So let's focus on that because this is Vintage VTEL Bonanza year here at Oshkosh, first of all.
Yes, sir. Right? 75th anniversary.
75th anniversary. So Bonanzas are a big deal this year, and they're everywhere. And thank goodness for that. You guys, before we get into your adventures, let's talk a little bit about the support that you get. So the Beechcraft organization, the Beach Talk, and the
American
the
Bonanza
Type
Society.
Club, the American Bonanza Society. The reason we see so many beautiful Beechcraft aircraft still, even as old as 47 is the oldest Bonanza?
Yeah, first production, I think, was 47.
Yeah. So for all those many years, and I'm not going to do public math, but it's a long time, right?
Yes,
so to have such beautiful representatives of the aircraft surviving to today screams of amazing support from the community.
It is, and when I first bought this airplane back in 1990, I had no idea the value of a type club and how much that Type Club has become a big part of my life because of the friendships, obviously, the fellowship airmen with other beach owners. But, you know, they promote technical issues, social issues, helping us with those types of problems and issues. And it is a big part. It's made the ownership quite enjoyable.
So with that being said, we had to give that little shout out to the ABS and to the community. Your particular airplane has some interesting history. And what you did with it is even more amazing.
It's incredible what he did with this airplane. But really, it's not completely stock, but it's not modified that much, is it, Adrian?
It really is, and it has a bigger engine. For the round the world, I went with the stock 260 horse, but with the amount of gas that I was carrying, I needed a little bit more power. So an engine upgrade, and then, of course, I had a field approval for the big tip tanks that are out on the end of the wingtips, and they can hold up to 100 gallons each. I've never filled them that full. Other than that, no, and adding an HF radio, it is pretty much a stock 1962 airplane, which is a tribute to Beechcraft and American engineering that they designed that, built it in America back in 1962, and here we are flying today, and better than ever.
Exactly, and well, like we said before, the support network is what's so important to keeping this going. Now, IO-550, is that what you've got in there?
IO-550 now, built by Pinnacle, Superior Cylinders, and a brand new composite Super Scimitar prop on the front, which has been a nice addition to it. So, yeah.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's talk about your trip. Where did you start?
Well,
let's start before that. Where did you get the idea to even start?
You know, I have to attribute EAA and coming here, this is my 34th year, to inspire me to become a mechanic, to get different ratings. And when I first came here with my father, and we came here every year up until he passed away in 2007, and just being inspired by the home builders and seeing what these guys can do and the restorers and the amount of quality. And my dad and I have always been tinkerers, and bought this airplane for $35,000. It had 26 previous owners, two gear up landings, but it's all I could afford. I was an Army captain at the time, and thank you for serving. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for your support. But I remember Dad and I combing the fly market. We found a little rubber grommet that goes around a spark plug, and was parked over by the Hilton, and we replaced that grommet. And at that time, you would have just thought we restored a Grand Champion. We were so proud of ourselves, and So I've been motivated by people in many different ways, and then coming here and meeting guys that have former Earth Rounders, and I thought, you know, I can do that. And I've always been a goal type guy and wanted to set goals and objectives that would improve me and challenge me. And of course, flying around the world challenges a number of different ways, because even though it is a very capable airplane, there's a lot of unfriendly countries and a lot of water out there. And then, of course, the North Pole has its own issues in itself. So I would highly recommend, if anybody's thinking about doing it, that you work up to it, and it's a pretty amazing adventure.
Adrian, the longest leg on your around the world trip, that was your longest leg, is that right?
No, the longest leg on around the world trip was Honolulu back to Oakland, and had a headwind most of the way. That was about 17 flying hours, about 18 total with ground time and customs. And the longest that I've flown this airplane is 21 hours from Reykjavik, Iceland, over the North Pole down to Fairbanks. So 21 hours.
You're single pilot.
Yeah.
21 hours. That's a long time.
It is, Ray, but you know, I don't sleep enough in life. I'm always doing too much, and I thought my biggest challenge was going to be staying awake. How the heck do you stay awake in a small airplane for 21 hours?
This sounds like a logistical nightmare to me. I'm just imagining, okay, I need to stay awake for 17 hours. Okay, I need to drink a lot of coffee. But then if I drink a coffee, I need to do a lot of something.
Well, there's those issues, right?
But you know, might not talk about all of that.
But you know, it's simple as I couldn't buy sleep on that trip. And I have a good friend, Bill Harrelson, who built a Lancer 4, and he's been around the world in both directions, and he's been a mentor for me. And I said, Bill, how am I going to stay awake? I thought I've downloaded movies and songs on my phone and iPad, and that'll keep me entertained. But the bottom line is, fear will keep you awake.
Especially over big water.
Well, it's true. When you have one HF radio and you've got to maintain and give position reports and balancing fuel and one engine and thinking one nav unit, that if any one of these fail, I may put myself in a situation that I can't get out of. And then, of course, going over the North Pole, you're thinking about, okay, where's the nearest divert airport? You know, I had a lot of gas on board and balancing it, and thinking about, well, if the engine does quit, how am I going to survive? Who do I talk with? And had a lot of support from a lot of friends on the ground, and it all came together. Had a good team.
Adrian, when you were making these trips, did you have somebody following you? Did you have somebody knew where you were?
I had a ground support guy, and one guy I'd like to give a shout-out for is John Whitehead. He was in Texas. 6 o'clock in the morning in Iceland, 10 o'clock at night in Texas, and he stayed up for the entire 22 hours until I was on the ground and called him in Alaska. And we're texting back and forth on the Iridium SATCON phone, and I'm giving him my nav report, temperatures, fuel burn, winds, fuel remaining, and we're going back and forth. And the plan was, once I got to the North Pole, I had to decide, where do I go? Do I have enough gas? Are the winds, is my fuel schedule appropriate to what we had projected? Do I go to Alaska? Do I turn around and go to Spitsbergen in Norway? Do I divert to Canada? Because there's no weather reporting stations up there. It's all forecast stuff. So John Whitehead helped me the whole entire way and could have never done it without his support.
Right. So, So these gentlemen who did this before you were how you figured out, like, a route.
Routes,
and things like that.
Absolutely.
Where your diversion airports
do's and don'ts
are.
And there's things that come up that you never even think about, because GA, as we know it in this country, and the freedom that we have to fly, and there is nowhere else in the world like we have it here.
Okay, that's wow.
One interesting thing, as you cross the North Pole, I think it's very interesting. You didn't see a lot of beautiful scenery, but tell us, your instruments just went berserko, right?
Yeah, they were, because I went over True North, and on my way down to Alaska, I'm tracking south, but because the magnetic North Pole is still in front of me, everything in the airplane says I'm flying north when I'm actually flying south. So for about 6, maybe 8 hours, I navigated solely off an iPad with ForeFlight hooked up to a Stratus, because there's no magnetometer, there's no compass. The iPad knew exactly where it was and what my track was to get there. But I didn't realize that, having never been up there. And when you cross over the North Pole, it's not like crossing over VOR where the needles flip, because the magnetic field, it covers such a large area. It takes hours, about 6 hours, before the airplane settles down. And that was a little bit scary, to be honest with you.
So people who are listening, I know, are asking the same question I'm going to ask you. Is Rudolph's nose really red?
You know, his whole body was red. He was playing tennis down there. I saw him batting balls back and forth. So he was working up a sweat, trying to stay in shape so he can deliver the packages to all the kids this year.
But in all seriousness, I've been over the North Pole, not in a little airplane, in a big jet. But there just really isn't much out there.
And there's nothing. And what people don't realize, the North Pole is in the middle of the ocean. It's not on land.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And even I have to admit, a few years ago, I thought, where is the North Pole? I never really learned that in geography, but there's nothing up there. On the South Pole, there's the South Pole Station, because it's on land and it doesn't move. So anything that's on the North Pole moves because of the ice flow. So there is nothing there.
What's next, Adrian? You've done around the world. You went to the North Pole. Is there something in your future that
you know there is
at?
Ray, I'm looking at the South Pole, but it's a significant challenge because the distances are greater, little chance of survival. The weather, weather systems don't hang out on the pole because of the Coriolis effect. The weather to get across the Southern Ocean to the South Pole and the altitudes are a real challenge for a single engine recipient. Nobody has ever gone around the world and over the poles in a production-built single engine. So this would be a very first. And that is driving me to see whether I can do it. So I'm planning a year from this January to do the South Pole.
I wouldn't bet against him, would you, Jeff?
No, I'm not going to bet against you.
No, thank you, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, we've been talking to Adrian Eichhorn, who had an amazing trip with his Bonanza. Thank you so much for joining us
thank
today.
Thank you, Jeff.
In Vintage. And
thank
and
you, Ray.
Down here and
keep up
sharing
the fire,
your story
you
with
bet.
Us. Thank you.
Thank you.
J-Mon G, we're on the fly. We're down at Vintage. It's Monday. It's a beautiful day. Come on down and check out the venue. We'll be right back with some more exciting stories. You're listening to EAA Radio.